Greetings, cultivators from around the world. Jordan River here, and remember to collect your GrowCast box tops and mail them back to Pueblo, Colorado. Today we have Austin on the line. Austin Young is an incredible cultivator. This is such a good episode. It's awesome to talk to a large-scale cultivator who's doing it on an incredible level like he is. But we also talk about managing lots of mothers, taking lots of clones, and a lot of healthy clone talk. Yeah, this is a great episode. I know you're going to absolutely love it. Before we jump into it with Austin, though, going to give some love to GrowCast Seed Co. That's right. The new line should be out as you're hearing this. The Pancakes Pollination Mini Drop. The members might have gobbled it all up, but you can find all our offerings at growcastpodcast.com/seedco. That's S-E-E-D-C-O. growcastpodcast.com/seedco. Check out the Peach Quake Pollination. We still got some great crosses up there available. A couple of Ice Cream Wolfman crosses left. And of course, the Pancakes Pollination. If you've been following Ryza Rich, you've seen some of the amazing pictures that have been coming out of the members' gardens and the listeners' gardens. GrowCast Seed Co. has got that fire, baby. You've listened to the episodes with Rich. Go ahead and grab a pack. You won't regret it. GrowCastPodcast.com/seedco. We appreciate your support and enjoy that fire, everybody. All right, let's get into it with Austin. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in again today. Before we get started, as always, I urge you to share the show, tell a grower about the show, turn someone on to growing, and show them GrowCast. I do appreciate it, folks. Find the Order of Cultivation, our little secret society of growers, at growcastpodcast.com/membership, and go to growcastpodcast.com/classes to see all the amazing classes that we have all over the country. Soil biology, breeding classes, whatever you want, we got it there. Today, we have a brand new guest. We've been talking off air for a while. He's a friend of mine. He's a large-scale cultivator out in Colorado. Very excited to have him on this month to talk about plant health, specifically maintaining plant health at scale. It's a different story when you have to crank things up and that plant count gets into the four digits, five digits. It's a whole different game. Today we have from Boone Farms, Austin Young is on the line. What's up, Austin?
Hey, how's it going, Jordan? Good to talk to you.
Going good. Thank you for joining me on the show, man. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Of course, man. So before we get into all of the incredible stuff that you're doing up on Boone Farms, you know, your 10,000 plus plants that you're working with, for the audience, can you tell us about your cultivation story personally, and then what eventually brought you to this large scale Boone Farms in Colorado?
Sure. Well, to kind of take it all the way back, I grew up in Indiana in a small farming community. And I just, you know, I kind of always been around agriculture my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
Grew up in a really small town. Everybody that I knew, all my friends and everything, I mean, most of them grew up on farms. Their parents were farmers. It was, you know, and when you kind of grow up around them, my parents were not, but still, you know, you kind of get exposed to that way of life.
Yep.
About 8 years ago, I made the decision finally to come to Colorado to really get serious about cultivation, cannabis cultivation. You know, in Indiana, I grew up, you know, my love for cannabis is lifelong. It's definitely, it goes way back. But obviously, as we all know, in other states, you can only do so much.
And in Indiana, especially. Not the cannabis mecca that Colorado is necessarily. I think that's a fair statement.
That's a very fair statement. It's so funny because I grew up in Hamilton County in Indiana, and my fellow deadheads out there will know about Hamilton County. I grew up like 15 minutes from Deer Creek, and so grew up going out there, and we've all heard all the stories about that and crashing the gates and all the cops in Hamilton County. And it's definitely, I mean, it's if you want to dig into cannabis and really choose to get serious about it, it is 100% not the place to do it. And so I found that out, you know, kind of the hard way. I was fortunate to come out here when I did.
Mm-hmm.
I've told people this before, and, you know, had I stayed, I, you know, the same plant that has allowed me to flourish out here and to really dig in and just pursue something that I've always been passionate about and to really get serious about it, you know, the same thing would have put me in prison back there.
Yeah.
So, and here it's just, you know, it's completely different. So Colorado's definitely, it's definitely been a blessing in that regard. when I moved out here, the first legal job that I took, I got plugged in with Sean Honaker at Yeti Farms. You know, similar to here, it's not as big, but they also do fairly large scale outdoor cultivation.
Sure.
Which back then was like 5,000 plants. So I got exposed to kind of large outdoor growing pretty quickly in the legal industry. And fast forward 5-6 years later, I had kind of stepped away from something that I was doing. I knew a couple of the guys out here already. You know, I came out and talked to them. And it's after seeing this, obviously, it's a big undertaking and it's a challenge for sure.
I bet out there at Boone Farms, you're saying
absolutely.
They were thinking about bringing you on and they showed you everything they had going out there. And that must have been a turning point in your career.
Well, of course. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, just kind of, you know, it just took it to another level as far as size and everything. You know, I mean, this year we're doubling anything that I've ever done in the past. We'll have 15,000 in ground this season,
Jesus.
Which is a lot. Yeah.
Which is a lot. Yeah. 100%, dude. That's so, I love to talk to people like you on this show because we primarily focus on, I would say, craft grow or home grow, just because that is the majority of our audience technically. And
sure,
we like to educate those types of people. But whenever we can talk to somebody who has as many plants as you have going, it's very, very interesting. Even to just us five plant home growers, like, I love hearing about this. 15,000 plants. That must be a sight to behold from the drone. You know what I mean? Flying above.
Yeah.
That's got to be crazy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, we've taken some great video in the past. And when you can really get up there and see the scale of it, it's a little overwhelming. I mean, it's pretty impressive.
That is pretty impressive. Cool.
But, you know, to kind of connect all that back to what you just said, I definitely, you know, I credit, you know, a lot of the knowledge that I have to a man that, you know, he had been doing it for a long time. He comes from obviously the traditional market dating back into the 70s. And obviously, you know, for obvious reasons, his cultivation was always small, his personal cultivation.
Right.
And saying, I met him out here, obviously. He came out here to pursue this same way I did. But, you know, the same principles really apply. The trick is, I mean, you know, a lot of the things that we all love to do in a boutique small setting and that are great practices. I mean, there's no doubt about it. They don't always work on this scale.
I bet.
Right, right. So the trick of it, I mean, just to give you an example, you know, cloning is a great example.
Mm-hmm.
If you talk to any old schoolers, for sure, and I guess, you know, everybody in general, razor blades are always kind of, you really want that sharp cut.
Oh, yeah.
For a couple of reasons. I mean, just for a nice clean wound so that you develop a great callus. But the thing is that, you know, and I've tried to do this with people and you've got, you know, you just have people sitting there with razor blades kind of all day long. And
15,000 plants,
right,
one at
exactly.
a time.
Right, right. For sure.
Is there any way, you know, we were talking off air about topping. And how someone might ask you, someone DMs you and says, do you guys top your plants? And how that's 15,000 tops
right.
you have to take. Is there any sort of automated cannabis topper or cannabis trimming system? I mean, I guess you could just get up there with a hedge clipper and just like mow it down.
You certainly could. I mean, that'd be the old school way to do it. I've seen that. It's funny you just mentioned that. I remember seeing that done to some just gorgeous plants, and I saw an old schooler come out with a set of clippers, hedge clippers, and he went right through those things and chopped every one in half. And I'll never forget the other guy. He came from somewhere else, and he came running, screaming his head off, you know, about what are you doing? And 2 weeks later, sure enough, those were the most gorgeous bushes you ever saw.
Wow. I mean, it's topping. Topping is topping. That's really high stress training.
Right, right. But the thing is that, you know, they love it. As long as they can endure it, they love it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the thing. But I don't know. You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. I spend a lot of time online, even in social media apps, looking at just agriculture around the world. It seems that the Asians are very much kind of it just seems like they bring a lot of innovation to mm-hmm. agriculture. So certainly there are robots that are being designed for all different kinds of uses. I haven't specifically seen a topping robot, but I have heard of robots that go in and basically defoliate, do everything.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Defoliation robot? That's what you're going to need with your scale, man, because
right,
the old wooks at the, you know, taking the dabs between shifts. I'm not sure that 15,000 plants. No, I'm just kidding.
Right.
That is very
right.
fascinating, though, to see how this stuff all progresses.
Sure.
I guess we can get into cuttings in a second here. Yeah, I want to continue to go down this path of kind of keeping plants healthy at scale. You know, we are here in July. At the time of this recording, it's actually in June.
Sure.
A lot of people getting their plants in the ground. You know, a big transition from preparing your harvest and you got them in your greenhouses or your indoor or whatever, and then now putting them outside, getting them in ground, that is a big transition stage.
Absolutely.
Do you have any advice for growers of any type of methodologies that are moving from, you know, where they are now into the ground? How do you keep your plants healthy and vibrant during that transition?
Well, the biggest thing is, I mean, you're going, especially here in Colorado, if we're talking about putting plants outside specifically, the best advice I can give you is to take it slow. You know, I think anybody that's grown out here outdoors, you know, I'll be the first to admit that when I first came out here, you know, I put a plant out under a shade tree and I fried it in about 3 hours. And it was a great lesson because, you know, you figure out very quickly then just how intense the sun is.
Under a shade tree, it's still fried?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I think as the afternoon progressed, the shadows moved and
sure.
it probably went, you know.
I see what you're saying. The strength of the sun is a little bit bigger than that crappy old CMH
Absolutely.
You have hanging in your garage.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally. For sure. So, you know, the best advice as far as actually just getting the plants outside is shade cloth, which is pretty simple, but it really, I mean, you know, when we start to whatever day we decide that we're going to go into the ground, even in the greenhouse, I like to try to get them out of the greenhouse under a shade cloth for 2 to 3 days and really let them start to get exposed to some direct sunlight, because even the panels of the greenhouse diffuse different things
mm-hmm.
and certainly soften the sun's natural light. So it's a very harsh transition. So the biggest thing really is to just give them time to acclimate. Obviously, don't do it in the heat of the day. Try to do it in the evening or in the morning and just take it slow.
That's really good advice. Yeah, the elements being your plant being exposed to the elements. There's a lot that goes on there. It's a big transition.
For sure.
Do you guys have heavy winds? In a greenhouse, you don't got to worry about this, but how do you deal with wind and cannabis, windburn?
For people that know where we are, we're located about 20 miles east of Pueblo. If you know this area, I mean, we get wind every day. I mean, obviously, you know, varying severity depending on the day, but these plants will 100% experience, you know, 50 mile an hour wind gusts. There's no doubt about it. The biggest thing, you know, they're going to get exposed to it, and there's just no way around it. Certainly, we have talked about, you know, people put wind block on the fences.
Yep.
We've talked about putting up berms around the property. But from a plant perspective specifically, the biggest thing you can do is make sure that that plant is healthy when it goes out.
Mm-hmm.
And to take that a step further, I feed a lot of silica in the greenhouse, not only into my mom's, but into the clones themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just really develops that nice, thick, rigid cell wall that we all want so that when they go out into the wind, they've got a chance, because weak little flimsy clones are just not going to cut it.
That is a really good point. Having enough calcium, having enough silica to have those strong stalks.
Absolutely. And, you know, just a well-rounded diet in general.
True.
But the silica certainly helps with that wall strength.
Seems to be something that people are supplementing quite a bit. Same with the calcium, you know, heavy on those.
Sure.
What are usually
sure.
considered, you know, they're not in the big, you know, primary macronutrients, the NPK. But
right.
When you put them on your radar, it helps.
And they're hugely important. And we
yes.
talk about that all the time. When you look at a plant's overall health, cannabis plants specifically, they need certain things to thrive. And I think that people take that for granted. You know, I don't think that people tend to look much past, you know, your NPK. They might get into their micros. But beyond that, you know, there's a lot of things.
Right.
Silica would be beyond that. There's a lot of different additives that come into play that really allow that plant to hit a peak health.
Yeah, maximum potential. I totally agree, man.
Certainly. So, you know, just in the greenhouse, we really focus on a well-rounded feed for the plants. It's not an intense feed. You know, I don't run super high PPMs or anything like that. Quality feed and the power of the sun is pretty amazing. It produces some, you know, really nice, thick, healthy veg plants, which obviously translates into nice, thick, healthy clones. And from there into the field, beautiful plants.
I love it. That is awesome. If you had your way, I'm sure, you know, again, at scale, you don't get to do everything you want to do in your tent, including adding products.
For sure.
You have to think about your bottom line and cutting back any unnecessary products, whether it's nutrition or microbials or what have you.
Sure.
But if you had your druthers, if you had your way, what are you looking at from a microbiological perspective when you're moving plants outdoors? Do you like to use mycorrhiza? Do you like to use trichoderma? What's your microbe game like?
So from that standpoint, I'm of the belief that I try to inoculate early, even into the clone plugs that I'm using.
Oh yeah.
I like to establish, you know,
biology.
I like to establish that. Exactly. I like to establish the biology right there in the plug before the roots even come out.
You're so
that when they do,
yeah,
absolutely. I mean, and I use a product, you know, sometimes these products get a little bit messy depending on what you use. I mean, I'm a big fan of Recharge for plants specifically. It's very diverse. It gives you a lot of different species. But for clones specifically, I use a product from Botanicare called HydroGuard. It's OMRI certified. It's a single strain of bacillus. It's very clean. And, you know, it does the trick. The roots come out. I use rooting plugs from International Horticulture. We call them iHorts. But the combination of those two, you'll have to check them out. You know, I can tell you that, especially, you know, we talk about scale from a commercial standpoint, we do tend to get a pretty good discount at your local grow stores. You know, for as much as we buy, we should, but they take care of us. But these plugs, it's even cheaper than they would be locally, including shipping and everything. And they come preloaded in these trays. They're amazing, and they work great.
Nice.
They're a little bit taller plug. They do make a lot of different options. They make a plug. Their standard, you know, kind of like Root Riot size plug is called a 40-40. I use a taller plug. I'd say it's about 3.5 inches tall.
Oh, wow.
And for me, especially knowing that, you know, these are going directly into the ground as clones, a little bit bigger plug gives me a little bit more room to develop root mass.
Sure.
And just the composition of it in general is more like, you know, a growing medium as opposed to kind of a spongy root riot, if that makes sense.
That makes a ton of sense. Good overview. Yeah, we're here. Why don't we dive into cutting products and taking cuttings and everything?
Absolutely.
We'll return to the program in just a second, but before that, shout out to the Foop, baby. We have a new product announcement from the Foop, the Veg Pack. That's right. It comes with the Veg 1, the Veg 2, and the Sweetener. Everything your plants need through the veg cycle. You will not need to add any additives. You'll get those thick stalks. My roots are busting. Dark green, vibrant green canopies, and the Sweetener. Yes, we did have the recent Growcast TV guest say that you want as many different types of sugar as you can, and that Sweetener is where it's at. I also think that it's interesting that the Foop recommends that you use the Sweetener in veg. A lot of people recommend that you use it at the end of flower only, but you know that it feeds those beautiful microbes in there and unlocks all those other nutrients that you so why wouldn't you add the Sweetener in veg? Comes in the veg pack. Foop is certified organic, OMRI listed. It works great in virtually all growing media. The veg pack is now available in 1 gallon sizes on Foop's website or a quart size on Amazon. You can find it at amazon.com/foop or get the larger size at thefoop.com and always use code GROWCAST at thefoop.com for 15% off. No code for Amazon, but it's a much better deal with the 15% off and the larger size. Again, that's amazon.com/thefoop and thefoop.com for the gallon size. Amazon for the quart size. Also, make sure to get on their giveaway. This thing is sick, the Foop Mega Giveaway. It's $1,500 worth of grow gear. It's a full grow setup, light, tent, all that stuff. Just go to foopgiveaway.com. Tell them who you are. That's all you got to do. Again, fans, air filters, a huge tent, a couple of lights. It's everything you need to blow up your favorite room or basement or garage. All you got to do is go to foopgiveaway.com. Be healthy, go organic, use the Foop, and that's what I'm doing right now, and I'm loving it, baby. TheFoop.com, code GROWCAST. Go and try it, everybody. You mentioned the different cubes. I'm not affiliated with any cloning cube company. I've always used the Oasis cubes. I've liked the Oasis cubes.
Yep.
I just tried the Root Riots for my first time, the ones that come kind of sealed up in a bag, like tied off in a bag. They seem to be working great, but I want to try these iHorts. I'll have to keep my eye out for the iHorts. I don't like the weird plug-looking ones. I like them in cubes and squares that are easy to separate. Yep. That's just how I learned.
Me too.
But I think they kind of all work.
I definitely learned the traditional way.
Yeah.
I think that they all kind of work too, and it definitely just depends on your preference, you know, even down to like rock wool. You know, we're all looking for different things, like in a rock wool setting that, you know, would most likely be like an indoor hydro setup or whatnot.
Right.
You know, everything's very much on a schedule. They're looking for, you know, super quick rooting times. They want to veg them quick. And rock wool is very conducive to that. Everything has their advantages and disadvantages.
I totally agree. That's so true.
For sure. These iHorts, you know, I tell people this because everybody tends to focus so much on, you know, how long does it take your clones to root? And the thing is that, you know, it's definitely strain specific.
Oh, yeah.
It definitely depends on the time of the year. I tell people this all the time. My clones root slower in winter. Yours will, too. Plants are very in tune with what's going on with Mother Nature. They know when it's winter, and they know when it's right now and when it's time to go. See a two-day difference, for sure. And honestly, you know, as long as they're rooted, hardened off, and ready for transplant within 2 weeks, I really don't care. I mean, that's pretty much the goal. Maintain proper health throughout that 2 weeks, get it fully rooted and acclimated. And as long as that happens, you know, if it's a little bit quicker, great. I don't really want them to take too much longer than that. But like I said, that's plug dependent too. You know, in Root Riots, it definitely happens faster. I did some side-by-sides earlier this year and, you know, gained a lot of insightful information on, you know, not only the Root Riots, but different products from rooting hormones to clone nutrients, you know, et cetera. Definitely the plugs play a big role in that. And it just depends on what you're trying to do. But
I
would definitely,
more,
if, you know, I kind of got into these iHorts, you know, honestly, because of the scale of the thing, you know, I ordered 30,000 of them this year. And, you know, three pallets show up. But the beautiful thing about them for me is that I don't have to clean insert trays. They come preloaded in the insert tray.
Mm-hmm.
So all I have to do is have my bottom tray in a dome. And, you know, I'm pretty much ready to go. But I noticed the last time I was in a local, I believe it was, I guess it would have been Grow Warehouse. I don't know which one I was in, honestly. They change names so much, it's kind of hard to keep up with them. But I did see, you know, kind of next to the Root Riots there in a bag, they are selling their 40-40 plug in retail settings. And I'd recommend you check them out. The composition of that plug is great. They root great, transplant great, everything. So definitely check out International Horticulture for your rooting plugs.
Totally agree. I couldn't vibe more on that. Positives and negatives with anything, as always.
Sure.
I know the Rockwell a little less easy to handle, a little less eco-friendly. I like the biodegradable ones, the plugs that kind of, you know, just kind of disintegrate. Oasis was really good about that. But the Oasis cubes were shallow. They were very, very small. So like you were saying, moving from the big ones gives you a little bit more of a buffer with the root strength and the root establishment. When it comes to gels, I got to defer back to what you were saying about jumpstarting the microbiology. I love Foop clone gel.
Yep.
I'm looking at a tray right now, actually, that has like a white surface of bloom across the top of the Riot cubes because you kick off that microbiology, right?
Absolutely. You do. And that, so specifically that, and you know, this is 100% a good thing to touch on because everybody that, you know, sees my page kind of talks to me on social media, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I have a great relationship with Foop. I discovered them, you know, kind of the same way everyone else did. I actually won an Instagram giveaway that the owner.
Oh, no shit. Nice. Yeah. Shout out to Larry.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Super generous guy. He's like always doing giveaways for us.
Yep. Larry's amazing. He's been so good to me. But yeah, definitely. And, you know, through the course of the last, you know, 5-6 years from their inception, I've worked with him, helping dialing in the products, product development, product invention, those things, which has been really fruitful for both. Yeah, actually, I'm on their board of advisors Foods Board of Advisors. So just to have kind of a grower's perspective, and you know, when they actually get the products in my hands, you know, what's my feedback on how does it work? You know, all those things.
Right.
But what you're seeing there, and the thing is that so everybody, you know, I've had a lot of people freak out about this and DMs and everything else. FOOP is very much alive. What you're seeing bloom on top of your cube is a beneficial trichoderma bloom, which is not going to hurt a thing.
Oh, that's from the trichoderma? No shit.
Absolutely.
I guess that makes sense. That's why it establishes so fast. It wouldn't be like a mycorrhiza mycelium or anything like that.
Yeah, it colonizes very rapidly. Absolutely. It's usually about, you know, from the time you stick your clones, I would say it's always when the dome's still on, probably like day 3 to day 4.
Yeah, 100%.
You'll see that, you know, and the thing I notice is that, you know, as your clones dry down, as I use a little squirt bottle a lot just to kind of squirt the top of the cube so I don't have to take everyone out individually.
Yep.
But as your cubes dry down and you start to water them, you know, certainly you'll see it. It's not going to become a big, you know, messy situation by any means.
It kind of backs off, especially after you harden them off. But I've always been told that, and this is just a general rule of thumb is my understanding, guys, do not use this as any sort of hard and fast rule. But the reason I didn't know it was a trichoderma bloom, but the reason why I wasn't worried is generally the lighter colored, like white surface blooms are beneficial. That's like a general rule of thumb.
Absolutely.
If you see something green, you might be dealing with like an algae or something that's more of an anaerobic microbe, which is not really what you want. You're not enough oxygen. But if you're looking at your clone cubes, especially using like a biologically diverse product like the FOOP or anything like it, if you're looking at your exposed potting soil media that you've been using as a living soil and you see this like carpet of white fuzz,
that's
generally a good thing.
Yep.
And especially if you look at the plant and it's happy and praying.
Right.
Then there's definitely that's nothing wrong. Yeah, totally.
Sure. That's a telltale right there. But the thing is I think that what was really alarming, you know, certainly, you know, I talk to a lot of great growers all the time who are very knowledgeable about this. I think the thing that's a little shocking, you know, I'd say that your knowledgeable grower with a decade experience or whatever has definitely seen that bloom on top of their soil. Certainly in like a living soil situation, you apply, you know, a nice hot tea that's got some really pumping microbial life in it. You'll see it. I think that what's shocking is to see it in a clone cube.
Yeah.
which I understand.
It's going to take over. Yeah. It's usually a good sign.
But no, yeah, absolutely. Certainly nothing but good things going on there. I mean, you can only imagine how happy that stem is, you know, developing its callus inside of an environment that's already inoculated and thriving.
It's a really important point.
Absolutely.
We had Jeff Lowenfels on the show, really, really great guest.
Oh, wow.
And he was talking about the rhizophagy cycle. You know what I mean? This idea that that bacteria is passed on from mother plant to seed plant. And when you interrupt that cycle with popping a seed in hydrogen peroxide or taking a cutting and dipping it in, for instance, Clonex, it has an antimicrobial agent in that cloning gel. So now that's a very good deterrent for maybe bad pathogens that might come in and cause damping off. But is it worth it to destroy that possibly, you know, if you're working with a landrace, possibly hundreds of years long cycle of bacterial reproduction? You really want to jumpstart that shit. You want to preserve the bacteria and apply more microbiology as soon as you can, in my opinion. I don't want to knock anybody. If you're in a sterile growing style, not fully sterile, but you know what I mean. If you're going the other direction, that might be your prerogative. But to me, you know how I feel. The flavors of the organics and the microbiologically driven cannabis growing, to me, is where it's at. And so I don't want to be putting an antibacterial agent on my clones or my seeds and disrupting that rhizophagy cycle.
Absolutely. Well, and that cycle is so, the thing is that those things that happen, you know, you call it Mother Nature doing her thing, if you want to be very simple about it. You know, those are it's like in a living soil system, you give the soil everything that it needs and it kind of does the rest.
Yeah, it takes care of the rest.
Magic happens.
Totally.
But in what you're talking about, by erasing that or interrupting that cycle, you're definitely cutting off something that you can't reproduce and that is just so vital. We can't really, you know, we may not be able to quantify exactly what's taking place there, but we know that, you know, great magical things are happening, certainly in that
part. Exactly.
And like you said, you put an end to that. And what does that do to further generations of the plant? I think that that's definitely something to take into consideration. you know, you talk about sterile styles. So, you know, it's like I've said this many times to people, like you could ask 10 different growers the same question and you're going to get 10 different answers. And they're probably, you know, 8 out of the 10 of them are probably right.
Yeah, going to work.
Absolutely. That's the thing that's so appealing about FOOP is that, you know, for the people that are truly dedicated to a 100% organic system, you know, it's like I've talked about this with Larry. How do you start your plants organically? Well, unless you go source an aloe plant and put some work in, you know, typically your organic inputs are cheap, but labor intensive. It's a great way to be able to not disturb, you know, kind of those sacred processes and to keep an organic system in place. Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Yep.
And then on a final note, even if you are going to go with the classic cloning gel, they all use the same rooting hormone. It's called, Indole 3 butric acid. Recent guest Queen of the Sun said, you can just go buy that powder and you mix your own cloning gel. But to me,
Formex powder.
Yeah. Right. But to me, I want that full spectrum FOOP clone gel early with the microbiology. So that is my personal favorite. Other organic heads use Olivia's. I've heard of that product. I'll have to give it a try. But you guys know that I'm a big fan of the FOOP. And you can even get away with just, like you said, a little bit of aloe or even nothing. But your success rates are going to go way, way down. Exactly. You really want to be hitting 9 out of 10 plus, right? 90% plus on your clones. If everything's dialed in, you're close to 100.
95 plus.
Totally.
Absolutely. I should never lose more than 2 in a tray of 50. You know, honestly, unless something, you know, pretty much that's kind of how it goes. It seems if they're... You know, if there's an issue that's that detrimental to the clone, you're probably going to see it over 80% plus if it's that kind of issue, which is not good. So it all just goes back to healthy moms, honestly. That's the biggest thing is the plants that you take the clones from. If they, you know, if they've been well fed recently, if they're clean, if they're just thriving,
if their microbiome is healthy and their rhizosphere, their soil microbiome, that's a really good point. And you're not the first guest to say that. Last time that we dug into this, guest said the exact same thing. The health of your mother plants highly determines just about everything from the clone you're taking, from how well it roots to how fast it veges to how it's going to yield, basically.
Absolutely. And to take it a step further, I mean, it's just at most farms that you go to, we produce one very large outdoor crop a year, you know, as opposed to people that might be running perpetual greenhouses, whatever the case may be. Some of the old school guys that do depths and whatnot, they tend to go through nurseries and they don't keep their own mom stock. But it seems to me that in, you know, especially in Colorado and from my experience, you know, any place that I've grown professionally definitely has their own mom stock kind of a nursery. And it just, you know, from the clone to your teen to a mature veg plant to flower and then all the way back to your mom's and starting back over with that clone again, it's an entire circle of life, and every cycle certainly affects the next. So it's definitely multifaceted, and you know, all phases have to be in good health. It's like if everything's going good, everything's going good. But once one thing starts to kind of get out of whack, it's a chain reaction. They're very much intertwined. And, you know, you don't really think it, but clones are really the foundation of every grow and the health of that clone.
Especially at scale, man.
Oh, absolutely.
It's the only thing that makes sense.
For sure.
That's crazy. Sure. How many fucking mothers do you have? You can't go around and top every plant for the next run. That doesn't make much sense, right? I mean, I guess you could, but that doesn't make much sense. So do you take cuttings from mothers, or like you said, do you source?
Right.
Like, how does it usually go down is what I'm asking.
So basically, you know, I keep mothers year round. It kind of goes through a similar pattern. But obviously, you know, before the plants flip in the field, what I like to do is I actually like to go out to the plants in the field that are still in veg. And I'll take clones from the field there to preserve the genetic for the farm.
Okay.
And then obviously I maintain those all winter in indoor and greenhouse situations. But yeah, that's basically, you know, I maintain them year round. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a constant cycle of, you know, trying to, you know, just increase their healthiness and their cleanliness a little bit each time. You know, the thing that's great about clones within any garden is that if you get into a situation, whether it be, you know, mold, pest damage, whatever it is, honestly, the best time to really eradicate that is in the clone stage. obviously, the bigger the plant gets, the more attractive it is to pests, the more actual plant surface area you have to maintain and to keep clean. Whereas you can take a rooted clone and dunk it pretty much get back to, you know, and know that that is clean. So clones are a great reset tool as well, as far as keeping, you know, your circle of life clean at whatever farm you may be. So I definitely encourage people, if you get into a situation where, you know, you're struggling with an issue that just seems, you know, you just can't beat it, really focus on your clone stage and getting them clean at that size and then putting them in, you know, making sure your environment is clean when they go on to that next stage, because that's a way you can really knock some things out.
Yeah,
for sure.
Really, really good point. The more surface area of the plant you have, that's just more area for pests to take hold. So use that.
For sure.
Use that reset as a chance to clean up. Very, very good point.
100%. And, you know, it's like the way I was taught, if you miss, you know, if you even miss just the smallest spot on a leaf, you know, pests are smart enough that they literally will go to that spot to avoid whatever it is, whatever pesticide you're spraying, until it dries and they survive. So the pests are definitely adapting quickly to us, but certainly, yeah, just that small plant size clones is easy to work with. It's very easy to work with and get your gear clean. So
speaking of gear, we've got our cube of choice. We've got our dome. You mentioned the razor blade.
Sure.
What are your thoughts on scissors versus blades versus pinching?
Yeah. So, you know, I use one type of scissor. Only one type of scissor. I'm very picky about it. I use a Chikamasa scissor. We've all seen them.
Oh, hey, shout out Chikamasa, classic.
Yeah, shout out. Yeah, send a box of them, please.
They're sharp as fuck. Yeah, right. I've wanted to partner with those guys for so long. They're out of Japan.
They're amazing.
And yeah, you go to their website, it's in Japanese. I've reached out to them.
Right,
they just work
with
a couple of distributors. They don't know, they don't care what my podcast is, but I really like those guys. We are not affiliated. They are great. Great scissors.
Absolutely. You know, you get what you pay for. And it's like, I've gone round and round with people about, you walk into any hydro store and, you know, there's your scissor display, and you can go in and you can spend $5 on a pair of Hydro Farms, or you can spend $40 on a pair of Chikamasas. And people say, you know, how can you justify spending that kind of money on scissors? Well, the cut is it's literally the most important part of the cloning process. When you go to that plant and you take off your fan leaves, you remove whatever nodes that you don't want, and you make that cut, the cleanliness of that cut and the precision of that cut is, you know, that's where your callus is going to form. And if it's not a clean wound that heals quickly and properly, you never develop a proper callus. And not only that, you also, you know, you leave the area around that callus, you know, susceptible to all kinds of disease. I mean, it's just, people overlook it, but really, you know, that wound there that you create, or that 45 degree angle cut that you make on the bottom of a stem, it's everything. So when you think about it that way, if you take it a step further, you really want that beautiful cut. You know, scalpels, razor blades, whatever people use, they're great. If I'm only doing one tray of clones and it's just like personal at home or whatever, you bet your ass I'm going to have a razor blade or a scalpel, 100%.
Nice.
But for this application here, you know, when you're trying to get through 1,000+ clones a day or whatever the situation may be, you just don't have time to pay that kind of attention to every node,
cleaning up
every growth node. So certainly I use Chikamasas. I've got 5 pairs of them sitting right there on my desk now. Obviously alcohol bleach. And then, you know, I use the little, not a big fan of, you know, their scissors, honestly, but the Fiskars sharpening stone.
Oh yeah, the little plastic one that you slide your thing. Those are nice. Yeah.
It's so simple, and I just keep it in my pocket, and you know, kind of in between plants, whenever I feel like they just need a little, you know, you need to freshen up that edge to keep your cuts clean. It's easy.
I forgot about
those
things.
And it works great. So
yeah, those little orange sharpeners.
Yeah, the little
orange.
Yep. And they're like $8. They're cheap. They work great. You know, just make sure you only sharpen your blade from one side, one direction, never go to the back side of it. And it, you know, those $40 scissors will last you a very long time and produce just, you know, tons upon tons of healthy clones for you. So
really good call, man.
The scissors are huge. The scissors are huge. That's definitely a game changer.
Chikamasa's so, old school. That's what I was using in Humboldt for the longest time. I like Diamond Cut Co. They're another one with a lot of different designs.
Yeah.
AC Infinity makes some good scissors. The Fisker ones, I don't like the spring. I know a lot of people like the spring loaded ones that are a little harder to.
Right.
I don't like those. Those are going to fuck up my wrist in the long run.
Right.
I like them to be loose and sharp, like a Chickamasa or like a Diamond Cocoa.
Yep. I use for all the clones and everything, I use the orange ones that are not spring loaded. They just, you know, they move effortlessly with your hand opening and closing. You honestly kind of, they're just kind of become an extension of your hand. They work so well. Chickamasa makes another pair of scissors that is spring loaded with a longer blade. It's a little bit bigger scissor. If I'm going to go in and gut up the bottom of the plant, prune a plant, remove some branches, et cetera, I tend to use those.
Right.
But for cloning, trimming, you know, you're making that repetitive motion over and over and over again. I like the orange ones with no spring. It just, they're very comfortable. I can do it all day and my hand doesn't hurt. And they work great. I mean, they work great. They're the best. So don't skimp on the scissors, guys. Spend some money on the scissors.
Good call too. Get yourself get the straight edge scissors for trimming and for taking cuttings and stuff, but then get yourself a pair of the loppers too. AC Infinity makes a great lopper.
Oh, absolutely.
And those are good for branches, because otherwise you're going to be like cranking and twisting on that straight edge blade, and that's not really what you want. Really good point, man. This is a good solid overview. I have to say, this has been an awesome episode. I had a question though. Oh yeah. It was this. Yes. If you're not going to take the, let's say you're not concerned about the cuttings, you're just trying to top your plants. What do you feel about pinching? Is it a good idea or a bad idea to close that wound and maybe prevent, you know, an open wound?
I think it just depends on what you're trying to do. I was kind of brought up with two methods. Basically, you know, it's either you go in with like a pair of, or, you know, whatever. It just depends on what you're doing.
But they both work, is what you're saying.
In my experience, yes. I mean, obviously, if you go in with a pair of scissors and remove that node, you're going to make a really nice clean cut and see the sap ooze out and the sugars come out. And I think there's something to be said about that. I guess to answer your question, if I'm going in to, you know, remove a growth node entirely, then I would use a pair of scissors, I feel like. If I go in and I'm pinching, I'm typically not removing the entire growth node. I'm usually doing more like a FIM method, where I just kind of might pinch the top of that new growth and kind of freak it out a little bit without actually removing the node and killing it. But certainly I've pinched a lot of plants and removed that entire, you know, I pinch a lot of leaves, and I have this debate with people. It seems to me with, you know, like with fan leaves, the way that they attach to the plant, you can go in with a great sharp pair of scissors and cut that off, but there's always that little piece of it left. And if you really get a hang for it, you know, you can go in and kind of just bend them back and pinch them off entirely. And it's like there is no wound. They just kind of fully remove. It's nice and clean. And it's, you know, it's like they were designed to do that, probably more when they fall off naturally, you know, and not leave a wound. But so, you know, I've pinched tons of plants just with my bare hands. And I've certainly never had any issues, I feel, with like opening it up to disease or anything. You know, I think that would be more with like established growth, where, you know, you go in to remove a branch and you can see that, you know, your stalk is just like a drinking straw and it's hollow on the inside. And there's literally just room there for things to crawl in and for dust to get in.
I never thought about that. Yeah.
With the small size of the wound, I've certainly never had any issues with it, you know, so take that for what you want. There is something to be said, I think, for using a pair of scissors and making a really nice clean cut too. So to each their own.
God, some really good advice on healthy clones though.
Well, just to kind of, to take it a step further, it just depends on the amount of time you have. If you have 20 plants at home and you really want to do it right, get out a pair of sharp scissors and top your plants.
Yep.
You know, if you have 2,000 plants and you're trying to get them topped before they go into the field, for instance, and you're just trying to get through them, go through those trays and pinch them. You know, different applications for different situations is kind of the you know, and to know what works at home and what's kind of fun to geek out on, so to speak, and really get into, and then what you can't get away with on scale, because it just, you know,
yeah, when the rubber meets the road. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
This 100%. Does remind me of one product really quick before we wrap it up here. And I want to say everything that you have coming down the pike and everything, but,
awesome.
I am reminded of a product. You remember I think it was like a TV infomercial at a certain point. You remember the thumb scissors, They're like gardening. Yes, you know what I'm talking about?
That's so funny.
They're two rubber finger caps. One sits on your thumb and it's got a blade where your thumbnail would be. And then the other sits on your index finger and it's got a cutting board, like a stop. So you can pinch a plant and it serves as a cutting board. And I mean, I don't know why that just popped into my head, but anybody use those things? Write me. You ever use those, Austin?
Well, funny thing. No, I haven't. But I will tell you this.
No one has.
If you see me and the rest of my fingernails are pretty well maintained, and my my left thumbnail is about a half inch long, you'll notice it with growers that they're, you know, it's usually like I'm right-handed, and it's, you know, I do all my pinching with my left thumb. So I always keep a long left thumbnail just for that reason.
Holy shit, that's funny.
And I see a lot of growers that do the same. It's funny you mentioned that, but
the cultivator's long thumbnail.
I've never actually ordered them and tried them, but yeah. Wow, certainly
that's funny.
Work.
The thumb knife. If you've used it, let me know. Especially if you like it,
right.
Please write me.
Right.
I'd like to.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's a good one.
Oh, good shit, man. This was a great episode. Wonderful stuff for our nutrition focused July, healthy plant July. This was great talking about, you know, taking cuttings optimally, having healthy cuttings, healthy mothers, healthy transition into the ground, healthy at scale.
Yep.
Really great advice, man.
Awesome.
What are you up to? What are you working on, and what is the future for you and Boone Farms?
So basically, you know, at this point, we're just trying to get, you know, all the clones wrapped up, and then the next thing is just into the ground. That'll be the next biggest hurdle that we have here. We're trying to get, like I said, in addition to the propagation greenhouse, we're trying to get a larger greenhouse online here so that we can get into, you know, some more perpetual greenhouse flower to, you know, just to give us another product that might be a little bit different shelf than what people are used to, but still maintain the big outdoor as well. So just, you know, it's always, we're just focused on the crop at hand. And that's pretty much, you know, at this scale, you kind of just have to focus on the task at hand before you get too far ahead of yourself, because it can bite you real quick. Yeah.
Yeah. No kidding. Well, Godspeed, man. Really, really cool. Thanks. What you're doing. Where do you want to give out any sort of Instagram for Boone Farms or for you? Where can people find you?
My personal Instagram is at Golf's Garden, if you want to check that out. The farms, I believe, is Boone Farms LLC. We definitely do have an Instagram.
You can find them. Boone Farms, B-O-O-N-E.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not too hard to
Boone
find.
Boone Farms.
For sure, yeah, check us out. I work out here with a gentleman named Sam Greens. A lot of you probably know Sam, and another gentleman named Jordan Webster. That's the management team out here. You know, Sam's definitely the farmer. We all kind of, you know, I handle all the genetics, propagation, greenhouse, cultivation, all those things. And Jordan does a little bit of everything for us. I mean, he's kind of all over the place and, you know, definitely helps us out in a million ways around here. But kind of try to cover our bases, and all the pieces of the puzzle tend to come together pretty well. And
I'm gonna have to come and visit you guys.
Yeah, you should. Honestly, I encourage people, like, it's, you know, if you've never seen a field filled with 5,000 plus cannabis plants in bloom, if you ever get the opportunity to do that, I encourage you to do it. It's you know, just the smells and the sights and everything. It's pretty awesome.
Oh, I just got a couple pieces of new gear. Why don't we come out and visit? We'll tour the farm. We'll fucking, you know, grab some food. We'll do an interview. That would be really fun.
Let's do it, man. That sounds good.
Hell,
look forward to it.
Yes. All right. Stay tuned, everybody. Thank you so much, Austin. I appreciate you,
man.
Thank you, listeners.
No, it's a pleasure and an honor. Thank you.
Yep. You guys are the best. It's my pleasure, man. And find us at GrowCast on Instagram. Get on the green list, though, growcastpodcast.com/list. That's where you can communicate with us. Fuck Instagram. They are holding down the cannabis community. I refuse to support them any further. growcastpodcast.com/action to see all the action, everything that's going on, from the classes to membership to merch and sales and everything. That's all. Thank you so much, everybody. This is Austin Young and Jordan River signing off, saying have an extraordinary day. Be safe out there, everybody, and grow smarter.
Happy growing, guys. Take care.
That's our show today. Thank you so much for tuning in, everybody. And thank you to Austin for being such a lovely first-time guest. Before we wrap it up, Photon Tech Lighting. That's right, the sexy red high-performance LED lights. You can find them at growcastpodcast.com/photon. Code GROWCAST saves you 10% on some amazing magnetic high efficiency bar lights. I love my 600 watt. Let me tell you, these things are off the chain. The magnetic bars make it easy to put together, easy to disassemble and reassemble. If one goes out, you can pop it off and mail it back. They'll replace it. It's got a 5-year warranty, and they've got just about the best efficiency and PPF in the game. The 1000 watt, Shane from Migros said it was too powerful. That's right, you're gonna need to dim this thing down unless you have everything dialed in. The PPF is almost 3,000 U-moles, folks. The 1,000 watt, they require CO2 supplementation. They're so powerful. Photon Tech lighting, baby. Code GROWCAST, 10% off. Get the square models if you have a 2x2 or 3x3. Get the 600 watt if you're in a 5x5. The 465 is perfect for a 4x4. And the 1,000 watt is if you're crazy and you want one of the most powerful lights in the game. Code GROWCAST at growcastpodcast.com/photon. That brings you right there. Use those savings and send us a snapshot of your code always to be entered to win free seeds. Thank you to Photon Tech. I love them. They're powerful. They're efficient. They're easy to assemble. Truly one of the best lights on the market. Go and get it, everybody. Code GROWCAST. All right, that's it for today, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in. Stay tuned for our classes. We're coming to a city near you. Check out growcastpodcast.com/classes. And /membership, of course, for the Order of Cultivation, our lovely little community of growers. All right, everyone. We'll see you next time. Be safe out there. Bye-bye.
I guess it would have been Grow Warehouse. I don't know which one I was in, honestly. They change names so much, it's kind of hard to keep up with them.